Sheffield Live, made in Sheffield, made by you.
Do you like Sheffield Live? Why not become a friend of Sheffield Live? Sheffield Live is a community radio station, and friends of Sheffield Live are people in the community who make a regular donation to keep Sheffield Live on the air. Join the Friends of Sheffield Live by writing to friends@sheffieldlive.org or go online to sheffieldlive.org/friends.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Sheffield Live. My name is Bailey Jallo, and we are African Voices Platform. Earlier this month, Sheffield City Council announced the number of people registered as homeless, which the local authority has reached an all-time high. In the year 2022-2023, more than 4,000 people or families contacted the council to register they were without a home. Well, South Yorkshire Migration and Asylum Action Group and NOMAD have launched a campaign to provide safe, secure and sustainable housing to people facing homelessness in the city. I have two guests here tonight with me in the studio who are part of the campaign to end homelessness in the city. Ladies, good evening, and may you introduce yourself, please.
Good evening, I'm Karen Naughtley from NOMAD. Hi, good evening, I'm Holly from SIMAG.
Can you please introduce yourself again?
I'm Karen Naughtley from NOMAD.
Hi, I'm Holly from South Yorkshire Migration and Asylum Action Group.
Thank you very much for joining me tonight, and it is much appreciated. So, Karen, if I may start with you, what's your role with NOMAD and what's NOMAD all about?
So, I'm Head of Services for NOMAD. We're a homeless charity that's been around for around 35 years. We help people, single people, non-priority, to access accommodation. We have 22 beds in shared accommodation, and we also have a letting agency called Four Trees Lettings that manages HMOs on behalf of private landlords.
Right. Okay. And I know you've introduced yourself, but I just want to know more about yourself, and also, well, many people might know what SIMAG is about in Sheffield, but if you just want to talk about a little bit about SIMAG as well.
Yeah, definitely. So SIMAG is a campaign group that campaigns for the rights of all migrants in South Yorkshire, based in Sheffield. And we're part of the kind of local and national movement to end the government's hostile environment policies. So we do things like organising protests, raising awareness, campaigning, supporting people who are in detention and things like that.
Thank you very much. Well, Karen, as I stated on my intro, Sheffield City Council has acknowledged that homelessness in the city, like many other cities in the country right now, has reached an all-time high, and action is needed. So what sort of action is needed? And from my understanding as well, you've launched a campaign in order to tackle this problem. So 2 weeks ago, you held an event. Talk me through, who was at the event and what was the event all about?
So the build up to that was that we found out that the government had changed policy. And so a new refugee was given 7 days to leave their home office accommodation. And from that day onwards, we just saw an increase that we'd never seen before on referrals to our service. Normally we get 20 to 30 referrals a month. And in November and December, we had 139, I believe. And the turning point for me was that I got a phone call from someone saying to me, if you don't take this 19-year-old, he's going to be on the streets. And as a mother of a 19-year-old, I just know that he wouldn't have been able to cope. So I started sending emails to counsellors and our MPs, and then someone put me in touch with SIMAG. And so I went along to their meeting, and we sort of talked about what we could do together. And, you know, I'd been to lots of meetings where we talked about the fact that this was a terrible thing that was happening, but we never seemed to do anything. And so with SIMAG, we organised an event at the town hall 2 weeks ago where we invited anyone that we thought would be interested in helping us. That included, we invited all the councillors, all the MPs, people who worked in the voluntary sector. There were members of SIMAG there. There were people from Hallam University, University of Sheffield. Can you think of anybody else that were there, Holly? Because there were lots of people, weren't there?
Other organisations like City of Sanctuary, who are also working on this issue, also came. And we had some landlords and people with lived experience of the homelessness in Sheffield. So one of Nomad's tenants spoke, and one of our members in SIMAG, who's a refugee from Iran who's been homeless, he also spoke about his experience. So we were trying to give a kind of broad picture of some of the policy issues, but also some of the experiences of people who've faced homelessness firsthand.
So basically, just to clarify, so in terms of the event that happened 2 weeks ago, that was purposely organized for refugees or for people that are seeking asylum, is that the case? Or it was more of a general people that are
From Nomad's point of view, it was about the homeless situation for single homeless people that we work with, and that includes refugees. So we came together because, you know, SIMAG's interest is refugees, but our interest is homelessness in general.
Right.
So, so for us it was homelessness.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was about the homelessness crisis in the city broadly. But like Karen said, part of the significant rise that's been seen recently is amongst newly granted refugees because of changes to government policy. So nationally, in the second half of last year, rough sleeping amongst newly granted refugees rose nearly 1,000%. And we've definitely seen some of that in Sheffield as well. But the event was to raise awareness of homelessness in the city more broadly.
So how was the event received in terms of those that attended the event? How was it received? Because you mentioned you invited politicians or local councillors and also people that are involved in the housing sector and also organisations that are currently working with refugees or, you know, organisations like Nomad as well.
I was pleasantly surprised, actually, about how well attended it was. I mean, one thing that I would say is that we just had four of the local councillors attend. I think they were all Green Party councillors, and we had, as far as MPs were concerned, we just had a representative from Paul Blomfield's office. The rest of the MPs didn't attend, which I found quite disappointing.
Yeah, I think everyone agrees that there's a real problem and that something needs to be done about it. I think the issue is, particularly from the local government side, kind of working out what that is and getting commitment from people to act. The council, like all other councils in the country, in a really difficult position because of the funding cuts from central government. So there was it was really well attended, like Karen said, and there was widespread agreement that action is needed, but it's difficult to know what that might look like.
You mentioned that one of the reasons for the rise of homelessness in the city is the fact that some refugees have been granted status to stay in Sheffield or in the country. You know, there are other reasons as well, but that's kind of like one of the reasons. And as a member of SIMAG, an organization that works with refugees and asylum seekers, how important is that? The fact that many of these people come into this country, some of them are new and some of them, English is not their first language, not their second language, third language. Even people that live in this country who are British or English, they find it difficult securing a home, let alone someone who has come into this country newly who doesn't speak English.
Yeah, it's an incredibly difficult situation for people. Like you say, it's such a hard system to navigate for anyone. But when people receive their refugee status, which is obviously a good thing, should be a moment of celebration, of joy, of feeling more secure, they're given only 28 days to leave their Home Office provided asylum accommodation. So 28 days is less than a month. It takes 5 weeks to start a universal credit claim. So that isn't long enough to get universal credit payments in place.
Can I just add to that and say 5 weeks is a good
minimum
outcome.
Yeah.
Right.
On top of that, asylum seekers are essentially banned from working. So when people receive their status, almost everyone has no funds saved because they've been banned from working.
So can I ask, what happens during that period before the 5 weeks complete? You know, is there any provision for them?
Yeah, so people they stay in the Home Office accommodation during that time, and they start accessing support through people like City of Sanctuary, Sheffield, start making contact with people like Nomad. But it's just not long enough to really for anyone to actually get a tenancy in place so that they can move smoothly from asylum accommodation into an independent tenancy.
Yeah. I think you also have to take into account the fact that many landlords will ask for rent advance or a deposit. Yeah. So if you have to wait 5 weeks for your universal credit claim to come through, where are you going to get that deposit and bond? It's just not possible.
Yeah. So go on.
I was going to say, like you say, it's such a difficult situation for anyone, but a lot of asylum seekers and refugees are navigating this in a second language. They might have experienced significant trauma, and this whole process is can be incredibly re-traumatizing. So it just adds this extra layer of complexity.
So Karen, from Nomad's point of view, what are some of the strategies that you think needs to be taken or that has been taken, let's say from Nomad, in order, you know, to tackle this problem?
So, I mean, what we personally have done for Nomad, what we need is we need more private landlords to come along and work with us. Mm. We have advertised wherever we can. You know, we're a small homeless charity. We don't have much money, but we've paid for advertising. We go to every event possible. We put in posts out on social media. We've met with Louise Haig, who also put posts out on social media. Mm. You name it, we've done it.
And as a charity, how are you finding it? We know that since COVID as well, many charities has been finding it very, very difficult in terms of financial issues, in terms of sustainability.
We're doing all right.
Okay.
I wouldn't say that, you know, we're rolling in cash, because no charities ever are. Mm-hmm. We managed to keep going through the pandemic. Mm. You know, we've got an excellent staff team who work really hard. We managed to carry on housing people through the pandemic, and we've carried on housing people up until January when we ran out of bed spaces. We have more properties coming on board in July, but Holly and I were chatting earlier and we said, that's brilliant, but what do we do today? What do we do tomorrow? You know, as a staff team, our job is to house people who are homeless. Mm. And I can't tell you how demoralising it is to go to work and to do assessments with people, knowing full well that you can't do anything else. And also by doing assessments, you're giving people hope that you're going to house them. And we know realistically, unless we get more private landlords on board, we can't do anything.
Mm. Talking of private landlords, as we, you know, you stated earlier that most of them sometimes do ask for deposit. Mm-hmm. And let's say if you are not working, or even people that are working, they do struggle sometimes, because when you are asked to pay for a month rent and also another month in advance, you know, with this cost of living at a time when things are very, very difficult for people, it's really, really daunting. Do you think, in terms of like the local authority, they've acknowledged that homelessness is an all-time high?
Absolutely is, yes.
What are they doing?
Well, I'm just going to tell you what, from our point of view, is that we work with some amazing landlords who don't ask for rent in advance, don't ask for a bond, and will accept the local housing allowance rate.
Okay.
But these people are few and far between. Yeah. There are, I think, too many people say the council should be doing more, but they can't give what they haven't
got.
Well,
it's their responsibility, isn't it?
But they can't give what they haven't got. You know, I'm sure if you ask Sheffield City Council, if they had the properties, would they house everybody who were homeless, that their answer would be yes. Mm. But they have to prioritise. You know, do you prioritise someone who was in hospital and can't leave until you've got somewhere to move them into? They just, decisions have to be made that I don't think for 1 minute the Sheffield City Council are comfortable with, but they have to make the tough decisions. Yeah. And if you've got someone who is fit and well, doesn't have children, then they're going to be at the bottom of the ladder. And unfortunately, that's, you know, it's the people that SIMAG work with, and it's the people that Nomad work with. I mean, if you're non-priority need and single in homeless in Sheffield, the only people who are going to help you are Nomad. And if we've got no rooms, then where are you going to go? And I don't know what the answer is to that, because I don't know where they're going
to
go.
What happened to... I'll come back to you, Holly, but I still want to continue with Karen here.
Yeah.
I know you are not representing the council.
No, I'm not.
But sometimes, or in some occasions, people think the council have got some properties.
Yes, they do.
And sometimes those properties are left there empty for months and months.
Yeah.
They don't put people in there. Why is that?
If I'm honest, I don't really know why. I think a lot of the properties need work on them. I think maybe perhaps if they could coordinate that a little bit better. Because obviously you can't let a house if it needs urgent repairs doing. Maybe that could be coordinated better, like I say. But also I think sometimes people think that there's properties that the council own and they don't always own them. They could be former council properties that, you know, somebody's bought them and they're deciding to let them out themselves, but they're not actually doing anything with them. I know we do have quite a lot of empty homes in Sheffield, and I think, me personally, I would get in there and I'd get the work done and I'd get the money coming in and I'd get people housed.
So Holly, if I may come back to you again. SIMAC has been there for ages. They've been always campaigning for refugees and asylum seekers. But still, you know, there is still a lot that needs to be done. The city of sanctuary, Sheffield being one of the first city of sanctuaries, it is a bit of a, kind of like, to say, shameful, isn't it, for Sheffield as one of the first city of sanctuary in the UK to be one of those that are struggling to kind of like house people?
I think that the, because we're a campaign group, I can be a little bit more political than I think Karen can. A lot of this is bad decision making from central government. Homelessness isn't an inevitability.
Right. Try not to blame any party here. We're in election time.
During COVID, there was the everyone in policy, during which the government decided it would provide housing to everyone who needed it. And that basically proved that with the right political will, homelessness can be ended. This is an intentional result of intentional decision making. I think, like you say, across the UK and in Sheffield, there needs to be a huge push to build more social homes. Over the past decades, the social housing stock's just been depleted continuously. I think in Sheffield, there's currently 24,000 households on the social housing waiting list. So people are waiting years for a property to become available. And like you say, making use of empty homes is also really important. So I think there's about 7,000 in Sheffield. And again, more money needs to come from central government for the council to be able to address these issues. I think what's really important is to remember that, like I say, this isn't an inevitability. And in other parts of Europe, they're coming up with really effective policies to reduce homelessness. So there are blueprints that the government here could follow, but it's choosing not to.
Well, it is 17 minutes past in the studio from Sheffield Live. My name is Paolo Jallo and we are African Voices Platform. We are discussing tonight the homelessness issue in Sheffield. As many people will know that earlier this month, Sheffield City Council announced that it has received an all-time high, a number of people that are registered with the local authority as homeless. To be specific, the council said more than 4,000 people between 2022 and 2023 had registered with them as homeless. Those are numbers not from me, but from the council. And the council acknowledged that it is crisis and that action is needed. And talking of action, NOMAD, a charity, a housing charity that is helping people to get housed in the city, and SIMAG, a campaign group in Sheffield, are campaigning to make sure this problem is solved. So tonight, we are discussing that problem and how this problem can be solved. So we've got Karen Adwali, Head of Services at NOMAD, and we've got Holly Rook, a PhD student at Sheffield University and a member of SIMAG. Those are the people here with me tonight in the studio. So Karen, let me come back to you again.
Yeah.
Holly just spoke of policies.
Yes.
And in terms of those policies, earlier this month, the government said it has spent over 1.2 billion to get people or to move people out of temporary accommodation in order to house them. Do you think that's enough or more needs to be done?
Well, it's clearly not enough, because if it was enough, we wouldn't have all these homeless people. So where they've spent the £1.2 billion, I've got no idea. You know, Sheffield spent a record amount of money on temporary accommodation. I think this year was £3 million. It's expected to be £8 million next year. And then I think they said 12 million the year after. Where does that money come from? Do we stop paying for social workers for kids? Do we stop providing care for the elderly? It just can't carry on. Mm. Support temporary accommodation is expensive. We don't need temporary accommodation. We need permanent homes for people.
Mm. So speaking of permanent home for people, let me come back to the private landlords again.
Yeah.
Because we know that there are houses in Sheffield.
Yes.
But some of them are owned by private landlords.
Yes.
And sometimes, as we stated earlier, getting into a private property is very, very daunting.
Yeah.
Very, very challenging. You know, in terms of some of the laws, do you think there should be a law here or a policy that can make it easier for people to get into the private housing so that landlords, yes, they can get something out of it, but so that it's not classed as social housing, mm-hmm. but policies are more favorable to people seeking to be rehoused? Because, you know, I know things are changing, but there are many good landlords out there.
They are.
But there are also some landlords who don't just, if you don't do what they want, they don't give you the house.
No, I agree with that. And I think we are quite lucky at Nomadin that we do work with some really, really good landlords. I think it's not as black and white as it seems. You know, I'm sure we'll remember when we had a Prime Minister for about 3 weeks who created chaos. And all the interest rates went up. Well, they went up for everyone. They went up for private landlords as well as, you know, the likes of me. Mm. So landlords have to cover their mortgage payments and they have to have a little bit in reserve as well to pay for repairs. And if the interest rates have gone through the roof, then they have to increase their rents because they've got to get money. They've got to get a return on their investment. I totally understand that. I think the Renters Reform Bill, that's scared quite a lot of landlords. They're trying to get... we're seeing lots of landlords selling up. It's difficult for everyone. You know, if it was as simple as, you know... Sorry. Without private landlords, this situation will be 10 times worse than it actually is. As you mentioned, we've got some really good landlords. We do have some bad ones, but we've got some really good ones.
Definitely.
But they're facing their own challenges. You know, and I will say as well, Sheffield City Council will pay for someone's rent in advance, and there are grants that are available for deposits and that kind of stuff. Yeah. But the problem can be that if you've got someone who's in receipt of benefits, and like for a single person, they will receive £350 per month for just for a room in a shared house. And you might think, oh, that's okay, but it's not really.
Yeah, I was gonna come back to those policies. What are some of the policies that are there in terms of if you are getting into the benefit system for the first time? But let me come back to you, Holly. Let's say with SIMAG, you know, Nomad has stated here, you know, they are kind of like in contact with so many landlords, you know, in order to tackle the situation. As a campaign group, from my understanding, ASSIST, which is a charity as well that helps asylum seekers, they used to provide kind of like accommodation for some refugees or some asylum seekers. If I'm not mistaken, I think City of Sanctuary as well. You know, is SIMAG in contact with any organizations that sometime, let's say, if a person is kicked out of their accommodation during their asylum process or when they have been granted status before getting into the benefit system, is there a system or a safety net for them where they can be at that time until their problems are solved or until at least they get into the benefit system?
So, yeah, just to say, SIMAG, like I said, is a campaign group. So we don't do any kind of direct service provision. Mm. But if we were made aware of someone who was facing homelessness, obviously we would then try and work with people like ASSIST and City of Sanctuary. Mm. But in terms of the benefit system, so when people are seeking asylum before they have a decision made on their case, they receive asylum support payments from the government, which is very, very minimal amount. And they also receive home office accommodation. So it should be that no one is homeless as an asylum seeker because they are eligible for accommodation from the Home Office. That doesn't always work out. People fall through the cracks or there's an issue with their Home Office accommodation. And then when people receive their refugee status, like you said, there is this really difficult time where there's a window and they, at the end of that, they stop being receiving their asylum support payments and they should be at that point eligible for universal credit. But like Karen said, the minimum that takes to set up a new claim is 5 weeks. And often there's a delay on that, or sometimes it takes a really long time for people to receive their ID card, and that can cause delays as well. So the whole system is just set up with a million hurdles that people have to overcome, and it just makes life really, really difficult for people to put those steps in place to be able to secure a tenancy.
Mm. And what do you say to people who sometimes think refugees are kind of like fast track to get into the housing? Well, you might be surprised, but some people
no, not surprised.
Do think that sometimes, you know. Like, you know, you do see many people sometimes who think like, say, look, you know, we are born here, we've been here, we are English, we don't get into the housing system or we don't get into the benefit system. But yeah, people come from different parts of the world. They come in, they come here because of our benefit. They come here because of the generosity of the system. But many people don't know that probably refugees do go, you know, or do face these challenges.
Can I answer this, Holly?
Yeah, go for it.
So just to be clear, if a refugee comes, if an asylum seeker gets refugee status and he is single, he has no health problems, no mental health problems, no children, he is not getting priority with the council. If it's a family, they will get priority, the same as my family would get priority. But I think I'm right in saying that Holly's a single person. If she went to the council, she's not getting priority either. So once you get a positive asylum decision, you become a refugee, you get the same rights as everybody who's who was born in this country.
So you are not fast track like many people think?
Absolutely not. We have got over 200 people on a waiting list waiting for a room in a shared house because that's all they're entitled to. And 90% of those are refugees. So if they're getting special treatment, well, I don't know what special treatment they're getting.
Yeah, I think you could hear from both our reactions that that's definitely a bit of a myth that, like you say, some people do hold. But as Karen just said, refugees are definitely not being fast-tracked. When they receive their status, they're treated the same as everyone else. They do have these often additional hurdles to jump over. But the majority of refugees facing homelessness in the city will fall into this non-priority need category. That means they aren't getting any emergency accommodation or anything like that from the council. And they're relying basically on nomad finding rooms, which they don't have at the minute. So it's definitely not the case.
So Karen, let me come back to you again. So in terms of, let's say, if a person is homeless, or who do you class as homeless?
They don't have to be people who sleep on the streets. The people who are rough sleeping on the streets, they tend to have quite a lot of support.
But because sometimes people kind of like mistake rough sleeping and homelessness.
Yes, they do.
Am I correct there?
Yeah, for us, I think we tend to work with what's called the hidden homeless. So they won't be the people who are sleeping on the streets. They'll be people who are sleeping in the mosque or the church or their friend's sofa or their auntie's sofa or their grandma's sofa. Or they may be sleeping in the car, or they might have got, that about covers it. They don't tend to be the rough sleepers in the city centre that you see.
So what's the process for a person that is to register with the council? What's the process for them to, maybe there might be somebody listening to us right now who don't know what's the process, like, you know, refugees. So what do they need to do?
So the first thing they need to do is contact Sheffield City Council at Howden House, and they should have a homeless application that will be taken over the phone, or sometimes it's taken in person. And then the council will make referrals to wherever is appropriate. So back to the single non-priority homeless, they will possibly, well, no, I was saying.
So when you register with the council, does that automatically register you with like housing associations?
No. So,
or do you have to go?
Right. So you have to make the homeless application, but
in Sheffield, there are so many housing associations as well that have got properties.
They are, but if you're registered with a Sheffield property shop, mm-hmm. when you bid for properties, it's not just council properties you're bidding for, it's housing association properties as well, because they have to put at least 50% of their properties, give at least 50% of their properties to Sheffield City Council to let out on their behalf, sort of thing. So majority of housing associations, their properties will be let in the same way as Sheffield City Council's, via the bidding system.
So a person registers with the housing association as well, or you register with Sheffield Property Shop?
No, they don't need to, just need to Sheffield Property Shop.
And no. I think it's really important to say that people can start that process before they are actually made homeless. So, for instance, if someone knows that they're going to be evicted from their current property in, say, a month, mm-hmm. they can approach the council at that point with the evidence that that's upcoming. You don't have to wait until after the point when you're actually made homeless. The council will still have a duty to assess you and support you before, to try and do that prevention work that stops people actually becoming homeless.
Can I actually just say it's not 28 days, it's 56. So there's a homeless prevention period, which is 56 days.
Okay.
But when you think of a refugee who has 28 days to leave their home office accommodation, mm-hmm. can you see that there's a bit of an imbalance there as well?
Definitely, definitely. So as a campaign group, what do people tell you most? I know we're talking about housing right now, but what are the main challenges that they tell you they face in order to secure a house or to get an accommodation? A roof over their head?
I think talking...
Is it to do with the finance? Is it to do with language barriers or not knowing the system or where to go?
I think the problem is that it's normally a combination of all of them, and they all kind of come together to create this impossible situation. So talking to our members who are refugees who might have experienced homelessness in the system, I think one of the things that people mention the most is this sense of feeling really out of control. So even if they are maybe getting some support from the council, if people do fall in a kind of higher priority need, maybe because they've got some health issues, you're constantly moved around. So that might be in one hotel one week and then a few days later another hotel. And that's also happens to people when they're in the asylum housing system. So it's a really, really difficult situation. The issues people face in terms of actually securing a tenancy, like I said, it's an amalgamation of all these things coming together: lack of funds, the delay in benefits being set up or needing to find work very quickly, which is often what people are doing, the language barrier, navigating a system that's incredibly complex. I previously worked in homelessness for nearly a decade and still found the system really complicated. Mm. So how people who are doing this in a second language and don't maybe have expertise in that area are supposed to navigate it, that's where the support of charities and other organisations is really, really important. Mm.
So Karen, coming back to the event that you held 2 weeks ago in order to tackle this problem.
Yeah.
So what next? You know, on that day, you had the event and, everyone acknowledged that this is crisis.
Yep.
It needs to be sorted. So what happened after that day?
Sorry. So Holly and one of our trustees are putting a report together because we had a part at the end where everybody talks about what they could do. So the report is going to be sent out to anyone who asked. Sorry. We asked if anybody would be interested in helping us take this forward. We have got a list of people who want to, so we are going to send the report out to them and we're going to meet with these people again and see what else we can do.
So basically for now, the main aim is to produce that report
and
see how the problem is. And
well, we know how the problem is. It's
Or is that a strategy to say in terms of tackling the problem?
That's more like it. I mean, I think one of the most important things that I've said to people is keep talking about this problem, because you don't know who you're speaking to. Because if you know somebody who can help, then, get in touch with Nomad and we'll see what we can do. Whatever we just stop talking about it, then nothing's going to change. We've got to keep getting that message out there. I mean, I talk about it all the time. I go to any event, I think I'll probably go to the opening of an envelope. just to keep repeating this message. I'm sick of my own voice, so other people must be as well.
Mm. I know you mentioned that some counsellors attended.
Yes.
And if I'm not mistaken, you know, you said most of the councillors that attended, probably they were just from one political party. I don't want to name the political party again because we are in election period.
Apologies.
You know?
Yeah.
So in terms of that, what are the strategies that you're going to take to make sure that next time you organise an event, at least even if you don't get all the parties or all the decision makers, but at least you're going to get some of the main political parties, if I'm allowed to say that, that, you know, that are kind of like ruling the city or that make decision on behalf of the city?
Well, for me, one of the reasons that we did this event was to call people out. And one of the reasons that we did it was so that people would attend and basically want to shame them a little bit.
Can I ask, one of the councillors that attended, did you in any chance have the councillor that is responsible for housing in Sheffield?
Yes, we did.
Okay, so, okay, that's good then.
I've got to say, the councillors who attended were incredibly supportive.
Okay.
And all agreed with us that we need to do more. What that looks like right now, I'm not going to lie, I don't know what that looks like right now. All I know is that we've got to keep trying, and we've got to keep talking about it, and we've got to get people on board to help us, we've got to get landlords on board. We've just got to keep trying.
Well, the fact that they have acknowledged that it is a problem and that it needs to be sorted ASAP, I think that is a starting point, isn't it, Holly? And also, I think in terms of long-term strategy, you know, the council announced that they were building more homes. Mm-hmm. Is that good news or?
Yeah, more homes is always really good news. I think just the other thing to say on kind of taking it forward and next steps is we're really clear that this is it's a really big issue and we need collaboration from whoever can in the city. You know, obviously a huge amount of this falls on the council because they have the legal duty here, but also other charities, whether that's the universities as well, churches, there's anyone who kind of feels that they can play a role in this or just wants to be involved. Collaboration is really, really important with issues like this.
Mm. And this is also more of a kind of like national issue. Yes, we are talking local Sheffield, but this doesn't only relate to Sheffield. According to CELTA, homelessness has risen by over 14%, you know, across England.
And I would say that's a conservative figure. I would say, because there's so many people that are the hidden homeless who don't ever appear in these figures. So I think 14% is quite conservative. I would estimate it much higher than that.
Mm. And also, in terms of homelessness, it does affect people in different categories as well. And they stated almost 140,000 children are also homeless. And in terms of mental health, we've seen mental health has kind of like increased. And for children, that is not a good sign, is it? You know, because they go to school and you'll only be able to focus in school or be able to achieve your targets or attend what you need to attend if you've got a proper home.
Yeah, and sometimes the temporary accommodation that families will put in will be a one-room B&B. They'll be moved around often, which for children often means moving schools, which is an incredibly disruptive experience. Anyone who experiences homelessness describes the kind of huge negative impact it has on their mental health. And then obviously for children, it can be really catastrophic.
I think one of the things to remember as well is that families which have children should never be in temporary accommodation for longer than 6 weeks.
So that's and do you think that's happening?
No.
Accordingly?
No, I don't. But again, it comes back to that thing, doesn't it? Where do you put people if there's no homes?
And can I ask, in terms of temporary accommodation, am I correct to say the council spends more money on temporary accommodation than housing them in normal flats or normal house?
Well, just to be clear, Nomad does not cost Sheffield City Council a penny.
I'm not talking of Nomad here. I'm just talking of in general, like in terms of temporary accommodations.
Right, so, yes, because so that's a short answer.
Temporary accommodation includes B&B hotels
Absolutely.
Or hostels,
yeah.
don't it?
It's much more expensive because it's done on a night-by-night basis.
Yeah, it's the prices are through the roof.
The reason why I asked that question is because I used to have a friend.
Right.
Who he was working.
Okay.
And he was put to a B&B, you know, in London Road. I don't, what's that area called again? Just...
Nether Edge?
No. It's London Road. You know, there is this...
Cheryl?
No. It's the main on London Road. There's this organization that works with young people.
Oh, Roundabout.
Roundabout. That's the correct one. Right? So, and he was working.
Yeah.
And in Meadowhall. And the fact that he was working, he was there for one day. The second day, third day, they told him, look, you got to pay.
Yes.
And when he was told the amount he was going to pay, he was like, you know, I'd rather become homeless. I'd rather be homeless on the street or at least sleep from one place to another than being there. And they said the fact that he was working as well,
it's true.
He was going to be there longer compared to like if he was not working, that it is the council paying for him or the local authority. And which I don't understand. How does that work?
So if you're in receipt of benefits, but first thing is supported or temporary accommodation is very, very expensive. No two ways about it. And I personally feel that people working are penalised because they're not going to get the rent paid. They may get a percentage of it paid, whereas if you're not working, you're going to get the whole amount paid. So temporary accommodation and supported accommodation does stop people from moving on in life. As the name suggests, it should only be a very temporary measure. So that then you can move to the next stage of your life and work and all that kind of stuff. A good support provider who provides good support accommodation will be worth the money that it's paid because you do get a lot of support. You know, all the bills are included, the council tax, you get all kinds of stuff, but it should never be a long-term option. It should only, and this is my personal opinion, is it should just be a temporary measure, a very temporary measure.
This brings back to what you mentioned earlier, the fact that he was single and he had nothing behind him. I think that put him right at the bottom of the ladder.
I mean, you say he should have come to Nomad.
You know, what I'm talking here is about not a year or 2 years ago, it's about 3 years ago. I didn't know about Nomad then. But the fact that he was single, you know, and he was working.
Yeah.
And he had nothing behind him.
Yep.
He was like, look, I might as well leave my work because
absolutely
working, it's you know, is costing me, you know, by the time he pays everything, then he's got nothing left for him to eat.
You're working for free. It's the harsh reality.
And then people end up kind of trapped in the system because, like Karen said, the supported accommodation or that, it should be a first step for people that then move on. But when there's these costs associated with it, people end up trapped, like your friend, because your choice becomes impossible. If you work, you end up kind of losing money. The system doesn't make sense in that way.
So as a campaign group, what do you think should be the best solution to this? If you have any idea.
To homelessness generally?
well, to homelessness, to homelessness and also to this temporary accommodation thing. The fact that if you are working, you know, you are kind of like paying more than you are earning.
You're penalised.
You are penalised. And if you are not working, you know, here you go. You know,
it's fine.
You're
cool.
So
I'm not trying to say people who are on benefit, they are happy to be on it. But that is
a kind of
situation when you are into that catch 22, you have to choose one of them, isn't it?
Can I just tell you, like, you know, Nomad has some support accommodation. We have 22 beds across 10 houses.
Yeah.
And the reason that we opened our letting agency was so that it was a clear path. If anybody in our support accommodation says to us, I want to look for work, we will help them look for work. We'll pay for training for them. Mm-hmm. Whatever they want, we will help them achieve it.
Yeah.
But then we've got a clear route. So once they say to us, I've got a job interview, we start planning where we're going to move them to. Mm. So temporary accommodation or support accommodation is fine, but you've got to have a move-on plan because you should not be allowed to keep people in that limbo. They should be allowed to progress with their life. Homelessness should be just a short period of time in someone's life. It shouldn't define who they are and it shouldn't decide how their future pans out.
Mm. And apart from Nomad, is there any other charity that does what Nomad does to help people in the city?
Not in the same way, no. Mm. There's people who do support accommodation, but as far as non-priority homeless and finding them homes that are affordable at LHA rates, there's just Nomad.
Mm. And for people who come to stay with Nomad
yep.
during that temporary period,
Yeah.
How many weeks do you give them, or how many months?
As long as they need. So, like I said, our job is to prevent people becoming homeless again in the future. We don't want people keep coming round and round and round. Mm. So we have the support accommodation where they have, we call them the training flats, which I don't really like that word, but it's about training people. It's about training them to pay the bills, how to use the washing machine, how to shop effectively. So you get them ready for the next stage. But if you move them too quickly, then it's going to fail. So, you know, we have workers who work with the people to get them ready to do the move on. Because it's about preventing them coming back round again. But yeah, it's not clear cut. It's not like, oh, they can stay for a month. It's what we and the tenants believe is the right length of time. But once they move on into our letting agency, they stay as long as they want. You know, they get 6-month tenancy agreements, but it just carries on as long as they're happy and the landlord's happy. It's their home for as long as they want it. We're about making homes for people, not houses.
When a person feel like they are comfortable enough to move on or to move into a property, and they will be able to handle their financial problems, but Nomad is not sure, we're not too sure. What happens when you get cases like that?
To be fair, we don't really get cases like that because we work so intensely with people.
Okay.
And we're getting people ready from the minute we meet them. Mm. You know, the first day that they're moving into our supported accommodation, we're talking about the move on.
Mm.
We're doing an action plan with them, not a support plan, because I hate that word. We do an action plan about where they want to be, and then we do steps as to how they're going to get there. So I think it's about respect. You know, we respect what the tenants are saying, but they respect what we're saying. So any move on
is
a joint
decision.
Yeah, it's a joint decision.
Mm. And is it a first come, first serve basis, or it depends on whether you are a family member or whether you've
sometimes it's on a first come.
Sorry, I'm going into too deep into.
No,
this.
No, you're not. It's sometimes it's a first come, first serve basis, but then you will always get that one person we have to put to the top of the list.
Right. Okay. Well, it's 7:46 in our studio at Sheffield Live. My name is Bailo Jallo, and we are African Voices Platform. Tonight, we are discussing the homelessness issue in Sheffield. If you've just joined us, earlier this month, Sheffield City Council acknowledged that they have received an all-time high in terms of people or families that have registered with them as homeless. That includes families and children, you know. So, as a result of that, Nomad, a housing charity, and SIMAG, a campaign group that is there helping asylum seekers and refugees in order to live in Sheffield, have launched a campaign to help solve this problem. Earlier this month, they organized an event inviting politicians, people in the private sector that deals with housing, and also housing charities and campaigners in order to sit and discuss the issue to find solutions for them. In terms of those solutions, that's what we are talking tonight, to see, you know, how this problem can be solved. And this problem is not only in Sheffield, but it is a problem across the country, as many of us will know. So, Holly, we've got 10 minutes before we go. But, yeah, right now, as we stated, it is a difficult time. And people are facing, or refugees and asylum seekers are facing. Let me just say people in general, because it's not only refugees and asylum seekers. The cost of living is also affecting many people. And people that get these houses again and that don't know the system that much in terms of like council tax, we've seen that's gone up, bills gone up, and you name them, you know, food and other things. Mm. We've just had what Karen said there. They still try to support people as much as they can to make sure a person is ready, you know, before, you know, they move out or they move into their own little world. Let's say, what happened to people who don't go through Karen's organization, through the Nomad situation, like with people who just bid and get a house through the council? Do you have any idea? Is there any scheme like that to support people? You know, are there organizations that help people with support, give them until they get to know the system, they get to know what to pay and how to manage their finances?
Karen might know more about the specific support that the council provides to people, but there should, if someone gets a property through the council bidding system, there should always be some kind of support. Usually people will have what's called a housing officer, and that person will help, like you say, with the setting up of bills, with doing some budgeting. But like you say, this is a really, I think everyone is feeling that this is a really difficult time financially. One of the issues has been that for years there's been a freeze on benefits, which has meant that the amount of people, the amount of money that people get to from either Universal Credit or housing benefit to help cover the rent in private tenancies hasn't been going up at the same rate that rents have been going up. This month that was put up, which is helpful. But there was recently some research that's just come out by an organisation that found that nationally, even with the increase in, it's called the local housing allowance, that will still only cover about 1 in 10 private rent properties. So the support that's available just doesn't match up to what's needed with how much rents are going up, as well as everything else with the cost of living crisis. So people end up in a really, really difficult situation, like you say.
I just want to bring you into a different perspective here, as a student as well. Can I ask, are students facing similar problems?
Are students, sorry, say that again.
Facing similar problem in terms of housing? We know that when students come into the city, you know, they get into student accommodations or they rent privately, you know, but what happens after their studies? Some tend to stay in the city, some tend to move on.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to say really generally. I'm not quite sure. But I think if they decide to stay in the city, then they'll face the same problems that anyone else is facing in terms of how high rents are, how difficult it is to secure tenancies. Normally, when people are students at the university, if they are struggling to find properties, there's some support there from the university. So I think it's a bit less of an issue. But another part of the problem is that actually a lot of landlords can make much more money from renting to students than they can from renting to other people. So obviously no fault of the students, but it can compound the housing crisis for the rest of the population, because landlords will choose to go with students and rent their property to students. And that obviously takes properties out of general circulation for the rest of the population.
So Karen, you mentioned you've got about 20 beds.
So we've got 20 beds that are supported accommodation. We've got 65 that are rooms in shared houses, HMOs.
And currently, do you have any idea about how many private landlords you have, you are in contact with, that does sometimes work with you?
We've just got 5 at the moment, but like one of them's got 31 beds. Okay. Another one's got 13. We've got a 4-bed, a 6-bed, a 5-bed. I think that's right. So we work with about 5 landlords. We're starting another one in July. But I think the other thing to think about when we talk about affordability is that people think living in a room in a shared house is absolutely awful. But we had a 1-bedroom flat last week that I must have asked 7 people if they would like to move into it. And they said no.
And what's the average rent for a 1-bedroom flat?
So in Sheffield, it's just gone up. So the LHA rate for 1-bed is 575. So I asked 7 people if they would like to move into this 1-bedroom flat that would be covered by housing benefit or universal credit. And 6 people said no, because they knew they'd have to contribute towards the council tax. They'd be solely responsible for the water, the gas, the electricity. They just said, it's cheaper in a shared house, I'm staying here.
Right. I just want to ask this other question again. Years back, we saw the government introduce what was called
bedroom tax.
That's the right word. There are some people who used to have children, but the children have moved out.
Yeah.
They still have 2-3 bedrooms, and there are families out there who desperately need them.
Yeah.
But these people some people are still holding these accommodations or houses, despite, even though they are still paying it.
Yeah.
Do you think there should be a policy here that says, look, if you don't need it, even if you can afford it, you should let it go for people that desperately needs it?
I think it's a tricky one because in theory, I agree with that totally. But I also know that if you had to leave your, what has been your family home of 30, 40 years, mm-hmm. it's a massive upheaval. And say you're, like you're 65 or 70, you know, a bit older, so you may not adjust that well. Mm. Yeah, I'm torn. I agree that they should be, but I understand why they wouldn't want to.
I was just wondering if that could be like a solution. Let's say there are some people who have got three bedrooms, but yeah. maybe it's only the mom or the dad that is yeah. still in the house. Yeah, yes, sometimes the children do come back, but not very often. And we've got so many families that are desperately in need.
I would say that the elderly people, mm-hmm. you know, like, let's just leave them. Let's not upset them any further.
Definitely.
But if, like, you know, there's somebody like much younger like me, mm. then I would think, yeah, you should downsize to a one bedroom. Why should you have a three bed when we've got a family in temporary accommodation?
But because of the bedroom tax, I think it normally does become unaffordable for mm. people to stay in properties that are much too big for them, particularly if it's like an extra two bedrooms. Mm. Obviously, that was what the government intended with that policy, was to make it impossible for people to do that.
And do you think that policy worked?
I don't know, to be honest, what the statistics are on that. Mm. I know that it does sometimes, like Karen mentioned, make life really difficult for some people. If, for instance, they are elderly and they've been in one property for a long time, and it might be that there's a very, very small...
Let's be clear here. We're not only talking about the elderly.
No, we're not.
Said, let's not upset them. Yeah.
The elderly weren't included in the bedroom tax, exactly. So it didn't impact them.
So, yeah, I think it... I don't know about the statistics on how it worked, but I think it can end up punishing people as well, sometimes unfairly.
Mm. I know at one point, when it was first introduced, if people did come forward and say they wanted to downsize, then that bedroom tax, they didn't have to pay it,
right.
As long as they were actively bidding for properties.
Right. So we've got less than 5 minutes. So, Holly, what do you think should be the long-term and short-term solution to this problem?
I think in the long term, we need a huge, huge investment in building social housing. We need thousands and thousands more properties, social housing properties to be built. I'm talking nationally there. There's no way that we can solve this without having more social housing. At the moment, councils across the country end up in this vicious cycle where, like Karen mentioned, they're millions overspent in temporary accommodation because it's so much more expensive, and that continues, mm. and there's less and less investment in social housing. So I think there's no way this situation is going to end until we have dramatically more investment in social housing and
do we
more
take that
support
as the long-term solution
in the long term? Yeah, and in terms of homelessness, there's been some really positive results from other countries in particular, and sometimes in the UK. So for instance, Andy Burnham's new policy in Greater Manchester that he's trying to introduce is called Greater Manchester Housing First. And mm. Housing First is a model that tries to end homelessness and is really successful by giving people a home and then building support around that. Mm. So there are schemes and things like that that have been shown to work, particularly in other European countries, that people are trying to bring to the UK that could have really good benefits.
And do you think, is there anything that you think Sheffield or South Yorkshire could learn from the Greater Manchester policy?
Yeah, I think adopting a Housing First model would be a really, really positive thing. For instance, in Helsinki in Finland, they adopted it as a city and mm. they've basically eradicated rough sleeping and homelessness has been declining for years now. So I think there'd be no harm definitely in trying to adopt a similar policy.
Can I just add that Sheffield does do Housing First?
A little mm. bit, right?
Yeah, it's been... It was piloted about 5 or 6 years, no, longer than that, a few years ago. But Sheffield City Council have recently started it again. I was at a homeless prevention forum yesterday where we were talking about Housing First, mm. and now they're hoping to expand it further.
Right. So, Karen, finally, what would be your advice to anyone who will be listening to you tonight or listening to us who don't know much about this? You know, let's say they are homeless or yeah. they are threatened to be homeless and they don't know where to start or where to go?
So first thing I would say is if you're threatened with homeless, approach Sheffield City Council. If you're part of a family or you've got health needs, they will help you. If you're single, no children, no health needs, then ring Nomad. We'll see what we can do. But my most important message is for Nomad and for the single people of Sheffield is we need private landlords to come forward and help us tackle this.
And just a bit as well, what would be your message to landlords who will be listening tonight?
I know that students pay more than single homeless people, but we will cover your property. You'll get rent for 52 weeks of the year. So in actual fact, it's not really that much different because you'll have, with students, you'll have voids for at least a couple of months of the year. If you come with Nomad, you'll never have a void.
And you'd be doing a really good thing for the city as well.
Yes.
Well, that's it. Thank you very much, ladies, tonight for your contribution. And we really appreciate. Well, until next week, this was African Voices Platform presented by myself, Baile Jallo. My guests tonight were Karen Audhali, Head of Services at Nomad, and Holly Rook, a PhD student at Sheffield University and a member of SIMAG. Thank you for